Hard to moment.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Tuesday, March 26th. Time is flying by very quickly. It's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and we're going to begin the day with Kenneth Belvin. He's a declared candidate for Congressional District 16. He's preparing himself now for what may be a formidable contest between the incumbent and him. This is for 2020. Very astute individual because he's getting it all together very, very early on, which is great. So we're going to talk to him between 10 and 10:30, and then from 10:30 to 11, we'll be speaking with Delpha Musler, the Yonkers insider, publisher, and editor. So good morning, Kenny. What a pleasure to have you on today.
Yes, thank you for having me on again.
Absolutely. It's compelling, so we need to the most intrusive in one way or another is the latest findings by Special Counsel Robert Mueller regarding collusion or with regard to the president and the Russians, and also somehow being involved in the election of the president when he got elected. Does that in any way change the demeanor of your campaign, or is that just another blip in the political world? You know, it happens, and then we move on.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of the political world, I think the biggest notch is that we still haven't actually seen what the report says. So I'm not totally comfortable, you know, commenting one way or the other or saying, oh, well, this seems all squared away and done then until we see that. And I don't.
Okay.
And the interesting thing to me is that for the last couple of days, we've heard Republicans say, oh, well, this totally clears the president. Well, if that's true, then just let us see it and let us make that determination for ourselves. So
good point.
I'm not. In the political world, I think that still has to happen. And, you know, I think in Congress there will be calls just for the full report to be released. I mean, what the point of going through this whole process was so that at the end of it, we could all know whether or not the president conspired with a foreign power or whether or not he obstructed justice in an investigation to
mm-hmm.
find that out. And we should have fully the facts as they are presented to us. So that's what I think about that. And on the point about our campaign, it doesn't affect us all that much. I mean, like I said, I'm interested in understanding what happened, and I would like to read the full report. But in
right.
our role, we're going to keep talking with regular folks about issues that they care about and what affects them. And I've talked to people who are concerned about, you know, the influence of a foreign power on our election and how the president played a role in it, if at all, and how he obstructed justice when we were trying to figure that out. So voters are concerned about that, but they're also concerned about healthcare and the cost of college and how to pay their rent. And so we're going to keep, you know, local issues. So we're going to keep having those conversations, and we'll see what happens when the full report is released. But until then, like I said, we'll just keep talking to voters about issues that they care about.
Well, I think that's a very compelling statement, and I think it goes to what most people would think. I haven't done a poll between Republicans and Democrats or independents or whatever else, but I would tend to think people are so have been immersed in this story for so long that they all want to read it and comprehend it on their own. So I've already started to see that there are politicians that are in office right now that are calling for that, and maybe that will push the equation forward. So we'll have to see. But you touch on an issue that brings me back to the gist of what I was hoping to discuss with you today, and that is you're already out there reaching out to people, appreciating what their concerns are. You mentioned a few of those issues just a moment ago. what are you learning when you get out there and you speak to people? What are their major concerns? And it can't be just one or two, because different parts of the district you want to represent have different needs. So what are the concerns as an amalgam amongst the large area that you intend to represent? What do you see coming out there?
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing that I've seen is that almost everybody has a different issue that they care about a lot, right? I talk to one person who's a student, and they say, well, I'm really concerned about paying for college and how to pay my debt when I get out. But then I talk to another person who says that they're really concerned about the stigmas against mental health issues in this country and how we deal with those. And then I talk to a different person who commutes to the city every day and is concerned about, you know, infrastructure and mass transit. So you're right. This district is large in the area that it covers and the amount of people who live here. And we all have different perspectives on things that are important. And, you know, I do as well. It's why I decided to run. So while I care about things like student debt and climate change, other people may also care about those issues, but may want to talk more about, like I said, mental health issues and how we grapple with that as a country. So the main thing that I'm learning is that a lot of these issues are connected, but also that there's so many out there that we need to be talking about that don't get the press that they deserve.
So how does one, as a candidate, and eventually, hopefully for you, representative, becoming a congressman, how does one marry all these different thoughts, and what's the best way of giving expression and acknowledgement of these concerns for the, you know, because so many people, I'm sure it's just not one person who's concerned about college debt. There'd probably be thousands and thousands of people who have that interest, and other people who are concerned about mental health, thousands of people for that. So that's a lot of issues to, I don't know, to mitigate to the best of one's ability as an elected official. How does one do that?
Well, I think the most important part of all of that is finding out how these issues tie together and then making the case that we can solve them that way, right? So when we talk about, you know, affordable housing, and we talk about people not being able to pay their rent or young people not being able to move out of their parents' homes, we also have to tie that to an issue like, and I keep going back to this, the cost of college. Because if I want to, I'm a young person and I want to move out of my parents' home, I need to consider what bills I'm going to have to pay. And I'm going to have to figure out how to pay off my debt and my rent at the same time. But if both of those things are unaffordable, then pretty hard for me to do that. Now, even tie that in with healthcare. If I work at a job that offers me health insurance that is not very good, then I have to worry how to pay my student loans, my rent, and my premiums or my deductibles or my copays when I go to the doctor, whatever it is. How do I afford all those things? And if I'm not making a lot at work anyway, because wages in this country have not risen significantly in decades, then that's an issue I have to grapple with, right? So right there, I just named four issues that all tie in together. So I think the thing we have to understand, and you know, what I hope to do if elected to Congress is tie those issues together and make people understand that these things intersect. And it's important that we view them not as individual issues, but as a larger problem with the whole of how we're operating as a country.
Well, I like the way you did put it all together, and it is interconnected. There's no way to extract one from the other. And I'm sure that most issues will be somehow connected, because it's one society, and we may have just separate interests, but at the end it all coalesces under our capacity to earn a living. And so everything at the end is financial to a great extent. So when we talk about the issues, because they're so compelling and because they, for a lot of people, it's more dire than for others, how do we, are there any solutions to any of these things that can be done now that transforms the past that has failed or that we now recognize has been a failed system? Or maybe there are more voices now that are saying it's been failing, even though it may be failing for the last 50 years. But we've come to a place now where people are saying, this really doesn't work and we can't sustain it the way it is now. So are there any solutions? Are people contemplating different ways of thinking about how to pay off college debt, for example?
Yeah, so I think one of the more interesting things about that is that it's, yes, a lot of the systems that we have failed in the last 30, 40, 50 mm-hmm. years. And yes, we're mm-hmm. hearing more and more that that's true. But I think the reason that is because different voices are being lifted up, right? Different people are stepping out into the conversation and saying, this doesn't work for me. This hasn't worked for me. This doesn't work for my neighbor, for my coworker, and you need to be listening to us. And I think,
right.
I think that's what's starting to happen in the conversation. And I think that's finally why we're starting to see more of a shift in conversation about healthcare, college, climate change, mental health, gun control, issues like that. It's because different people are stepping into the conversation, and it's not just more of mm-hmm. the same people in Washington kind of screaming into the void at each other. And
yeah.
there are issues to these problems. And people are talking about them. And now that Democrats have control of the House again, they can pass legislation that seeks to solve these problems. And yes, it will be tough to get some of this legislation passed in the Senate just because it's controlled by Republicans. But mm-hmm. I think that puts, if we pass legislation, it puts the burden on them to defend why they don't support these things, right? If Democrats pass legislation that canceled student debt, that made college free, that got us Medicare for all, that they passed the Green New Deal, it would put the onus on Republicans to stand up and say, this is why we don't support this. Now, here's our alternative. But they're not even giving us an alternative to these problems that they that need to be solved. So one thing I think we can do right now is we have ideas. We have good ideas. So let's pass legislation on those ideas. Let's make them defend why they don't support these solutions, and then let's let the American people see, hey, you're concerned about the cost of college. These guys in the Senate are not. Let's switch them out for people who do, and we'll get results on issues that you care about.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, and I think it makes a lot of sense, but there's one thing that I haven't heard. And that is, what is the solution, or what is one of the solutions for to remedy or to mitigate some of the onerous aspects of having to pay college debt? I know that even today, there are people in their 60s who are still paying off their college debt. But I was thinking about it myself, and I'm trying to look at why haven't we brought forward concepts other than simply saying, well, the other side is not doing what they need to do, and we haven't heard from them. But then we haven't heard from the other side, the opposition, whether loyal or disloyal. It makes no difference. I was thinking, like, how do we get over this? And one of the things, the only example I had thought of, which has been was there before I even came about, and that was, in a sense, maybe the word is wrong. But when we get people to go to medical school, it may cost $500,000. It may cost $750,000 to educate doctors, and they have to pay off the debt. But what's interesting is that the first aspect of once they graduate from medical school and they get accepted at a hospital. They don't get the same amount of money that someone who's been there for 5 years earns. So maybe these residents, they may only earn $75,000 a year, which is a lot for a lot of people. A lot of people don't even earn $25,000, but that's what a doctor would normally get. So it may get a normal doctor who's no longer a resident may earn $200,000 a year or more. So the question is there any way to reduce the cost of education by, in a sense, indenturing people, no matter what the discipline is, so that they can eventually give back to society? So you're getting something, that you're getting the education and you're giving back the power of what you've learned, and you're giving that back to society at a much lower cost so that you could still sustain yourself and not be burdened while you're indentured to begin paying off your loans, so that it makes it a lot more feasible to be able to get there. But that may not be the solution. I just didn't know how do we translate what we know is wrong or not functioning to something that is, and who's got the ideas? Because I haven't heard many.
Yeah, so I think, so to be more specific, which I think is what your question, you know, asks, my proposal for student debt, and I talk about this a lot with people and it's on my website, is to just cancel it, right? It's the only solution to the problem that I see that would match the scale of the crisis that sits in front of us and would solve the problem for everyone. Because when we talk about student debt, it's 50 million Americans that have it spread across, like you say, all age groups, all demographics. So canceling it or reducing the burden for some people over another seems like an unfair way to go about it to me. And just canceling it flat and even would, like I said, be equitable for everyone who's burdened with this, but also do a lot of good for the economy. So that's a proposal that would solve that problem simply. And we could do that tomorrow if we wanted, right? So the only thing we have to do, and I urge people to, like I said, check out our website, read more about this, but canceling student debt, the important thing to know is that there's $1.5 trillion in student debt in this country right now, spread across, like I said, 50 million Americans. Right. All we would have to do is pass legislation that would require the Department of Education to either stop collecting payment on those loans or just cancel the loans outright. They could do one or the other. That doesn't really matter. But the end goal is that they stop collecting money on the loans, because they're it's an unjust system that I think punishes people. So if we were to do that, right, and then people no longer had to deal with paying $200, $300, $400, $500 a month for their loans, they could use that money to start a business, to buy a house, to do whatever. So I think that proposal is specific, and I think some people are a little bit afraid of it just because of the price tag of canceling $1.5 trillion in student debt. But I would remind people that a year and a half ago, we passed a $1.5 trillion tax cut for the very wealthiest people in this country. So the money is there, right? And if the money can be there to give a tax cut to people and corporations who do not need it, then the money is there to invest in people and, you know, jumpstart this economy where wages are flat. So that's my proposal to solving this crisis. And it goes along with making colleges debt-free so that in the future, in 20, 30, 40 years from now, we don't have another crisis where there's $1.5 trillion of debt, and then every 50 years we have to cancel $1.5 trillion of debt. Cancel all the debt now, make college debt-free, and we have two proposals to solve a very big problem going forward.
That's a great example. You know, I'm appreciative that you have a concept that can mitigate this issue. And I like the fact that you were able to rationalize it and point out that $1.5 trillion in debt went to the very wealthy, and yet other people are suffering that are below that threshold. So, But I don't hear that so much in the discourse. And I guess that's the biggest problem, maybe because I'm old too. I just don't know how to resolve the translation of one system that I believe has failed on many levels and translated to the present to the voices that are quite correct to say that it didn't work. It didn't work for a lot of people. So how do we bring the conversation to a point of getting something done? How do we bring it forward?
I think it's about electing people who, A, have an intimate understanding of the issues. I think that because you're right. The system has failed for a lot of people, but it's done that because we keep asking the same people to go back to the same office and do the same thing over and over and over again. And don't they say that that's the definition of insanity when you try something over and over and over again, but it doesn't work?
And absolutely.
So I think it's just about getting people with new ideas and new perspectives. Like I said before, lifting up different voices into the conversation, because I think the ideas are there, right? I'm certainly not the only one who has talked about canceling student debt, but it's not an issue that comes into the mainstream of the conversation because our voices are kind of drowned out. So all we have to do is lift up those voices, change the narrative, change who controls the conversation, and then we will see different ideas that can help people involved in the process.
So in a sense that, like you say, ideas intersect and the disciplines and concerns intersect into a bigger sphere. So in a sense, you're saying too that maybe there's going to be a requirement to change the way we elect officials. Maybe we're allowing too many people with special interests to back them up, and they're getting the financial wherewithal to return back to whatever political office they're holding, and then they repeat the same thing because they've got special interests that may be steering them in one direction or the other. So is that going to mean that we need to change the way we actually elect people? Maybe we should be demanding, like they do in England, a 2-month maximum election process. Everybody gets the same amount of money, and may the best person win based on, I guess, their message.
Well, I would say that I would love a 2-month and not a 2-year-long election process.
Right.
So that would, I think that would do great for everybody. But
yes, it would.
You know, I think you're right on the first point that special interests have a disproportionate influence on the conversation. And, you know, we see that here. And I talked about this last time I came on. We see that here in New York 16 with the way Congressman Engel takes thousands upon thousands from companies like Boeing or AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
And it drowns out the voices of people who don't have that money, right? I don't have $7,000 to give to candidates for office. I have bills to pay, and I know a lot of people are in the same boat. So you're right. And a Supreme Court decision like Citizens United, like we saw back in 2010, that just allowed these companies to have way too much influence and have the ability to spend essentially as much money as they want, has really ruined our process. And I think I also said this last time too, when you look at other democracies, you know, in Europe, in Australia and Japan, one of the things that we don't see there is this influence of money. So if all of these democracies are supposed to be functioning essentially the same, but ours is so broken, for lack of a better term, and then we see that the only thing that stands out is the fact that we allow corporations to essentially buy our elections, that has to be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So solving that issue would, I think, lead the way to solving a lot of other issues, because it would, A, force people currently in office to compete on an even stage and stand up for their ideas and not have to not be able to hide behind their money. But it would also allow, you know, when we talk about proposals like publicly funded elections or donor matching, it would also allow for regular people to increase their say in the conversation, or at least their share of their say in the conversation, and have a bigger impact on issues that really affect them in a way that we're now just letting corporations do.
Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I can't, oh my God, I can't believe we've been talking like 25 minutes. Wow. So time goes by when you've got compelling things to talk about. So at the end, I haven't heard something as lucid as you're expressing, and it may not even matter in your particular case. So what others are doing in the state of New York or in other places, but are you starting to hear at all through the grapevine or through the people that you speak to, and they say, "Oh, I heard this from so and so, and I heard this from another person," and are we starting to form new concepts? Are we going to be able to bring those forward so that people can become engaged in these new ideas that may mitigate some of the issues that concern them and their ability and capacity to thrive in our society?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely an appetite for it, right? I think people are definitely hungry for ideas that are different because they see that what's been said to them before isn't working. And I think even if we use Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez as an example, she stepped into Washington basically yelling and screaming about climate change and the urgency of this problem. And now people are seriously talking about a proposal like the Green New Deal to solve this problem, right? So if it takes more people to get elected to go into Washington yelling and screaming about climate change, about student debt, about healthcare, about, you know, whatever it is, I think people are hungry for that. But I just think we need people to step up and throw their voices into the conversation. And, you know, and I will say, I do think that that's what we're seeing now, you know, even with political activist groups like the Sunrise Movement, Justice Democrats, Brand New Congress, we're seeing people elevated and running for office and getting support from these groups to push new, really bold ideas to solve problems that have just kind of gone unattended to for decades.
So you're really quite encouraged that we're going to get a new breed of thinkers that are going to be seeking political office. And is that one of the difficulties in vying for political office, that there are people who are already entrenched, whether it be 5 years or 20 years or 50 years in office, but they're somehow disconnected from the what's being discussed on the street? And are people on the street engaged in these new concepts that are coming out there, or are they dismissive of it?
Well, yes, I am encouraged by, you know, a new wave of people running for office. And I think that's a trend that we'll see, you know, and I especially think with people of color, with people in the LGBTQ community, you know, I'm proud to be able to, I think, stand up and be a voice for communities of color and the queer community. And I don't think those voices are elevated enough. And so I think that's an emergence of a lot of what we're seeing. But I think you're right on the issue of long-term incumbents. I mean, we used to be inspired by our politicians, and I don't think we are that anymore. I think we look at politicians and it's like, oh, well, you know, this is my representative. They've been there for all my life, and that's just the way it is. But I think we need to go back to having inspiring candidates and inspiring politicians who are really pushing bold ideas to solve these problems. This is America, right? We went to the moon. Like, we can do anything. We just have to
mm-hmm.
push the ideas that are there to solve problems.
Very compelling. Unfortunately, the time is up. However, before you go, I've got to ask you for your website address so people can learn a little bit more about the issues. And then hopefully we'll be able to pick this up again in another 2 weeks.
Yeah, I would love to be back. Our website is www.belvinforcongress.com. So that's BELVIN, and that's four, not the number, just FOR, so belvinforcongress.com. We did just update the website, so it's all kind of fancy and new.
Oh,
so
great.
If you checked it out last time we talked, check it out again. It's nice and new for you guys.
Excellent. That's great. And people can actually donate on the website or through the website?
Yep. Yeah, there's a giant button that says donate right on every page. And then in the top corner, there's a contribute button as well. So there's a bunch of ways to donate on the
okay.
website.
Kenneth Belvin, running for Congressional District 16. Thank you very much. I appreciate it very much. Be well, sir.
Thank you, Izzy.
Be well. Bye. Okay, let's bring in Delphin Musler. I see that he's already on the line. So let's welcome him. I missed him. It's been so long. Good morning, Delphin. How are you?
Good morning. A pleasure to be back on your show, Hezzy. Always a pleasure to talk with you about everything that's going on in our fine city.
I've missed you. You know, I mean, you know, without
I missed
your
you too.
Voice, it's not as compelling. It's not as compelling as it should
oh,
be.
Oh, thank
you.
That's really
so
kind of you to
on.
Say. Like I
well,
said, this
you know,
is it, this is very interesting because we have this month has been petitioning. It'll be interesting to see because I think starting next Monday, I think it's the 1st through the 4th April that people have to file their petition. So it'll be interesting to see
right.
who are the contenders and who are the pretenders. Who are the ones that said they were going to file a petition to make the ballot and who are the ones who are not going to be able to file and make the ballot. It'll be very interesting to see.
That's very, very compelling. I like the words you used, pretenders, or we'll find out if there are a lot of pretenders out there. So
that's
going to be
yeah.
crunch time.
Absolutely.
Well,
no, like we talked about, because of the earlier calendar this year, it became more the county
yeah.
needed to have organization. So I guess we'll see when the petition get filed or not filed, who had organization and who didn't.
It is actually quite interesting because they moved everything up practically six
yes.
months earlier than before. In a sense, it really brought everybody down to the same level in
uh-huh.
the sense that everyone was not ready for this and they didn't know exactly what to do. And it was also difficult. We didn't have such great weather. Sometimes the
That's
weather
also
was
true,
so
yeah.
bad, so cold. It was tough.
Yeah, it was snow.
Yes,
it was during that time when that 1 week where there was all that snow and everything. So yeah, no, it became almost like I guess now us in Yonkers know how the people in New Hampshire campaign.
Oh, that's true. Very well put. Very well put, Delphin. That's true. Well,
thank
so
you.
I'm not quickly moving up to New Hampshire. That's for sure.
That's true. I agree with you.
But it's a great place. I love it. It's New Hampshire's beautiful, Maine. I just love those places. They're really terrific.
That's true, especially during this time of year. Yes.
Yonkers. Exactly.
That's true
well,
also.
One thing I wanted to ask you about is the 17th legislative district. And
oh, okay.
that's up for grabs.
Yes.
And I only know two people that are running for it, Jose Alvarado and London Reyes, and there may be a third that I'm unfamiliar with. Do you know anybody else that's running besides those two?
I think those are the only ones I've heard so far.
Okay.
I don't think there's a third candidate running.
Okay, well, great, you know, because sometimes I don't always get all the information of everybody running.
Me too, same thing. Sometimes
busy.
sometimes the candidates don't send out the information to us, so we don't know who's really running sometimes. Sometimes we don't really know who's
exactly.
running until the petitions get filed, sadly, because, like I say, we're the vehicle where people can send us their information, and that's the best way to get it out to the public.
It's very, very true. That is a vital concern. Well, you know, I remember the good old days. This goes back quite a few years when Jose Alvarado was the Westchester County Board legislator representing the same district that he's vying to return to office to. I think he spent 10 years. Then he moved
on
to other government positions and stuff like that. And then I don't think that London Reyes ever held that office. But he challenged for that seat.
2 years ago,
incumbent Virginia Perez 2 years ago and lost to her.
Yes.
And she's relinquished her position, and so she stepped down, and we're having this election. So she's not running again. So how do you view this? These are two people.
I think it's an interesting mix here because you have Jose Alvarado, who has all those years on the county board, the 10 years of being on the county board, experience as a county legislator. And on the other side, you have Rondon Reyes, who is trying to become an elected official because he ran last time, and he's got a lot of supporters and everything. So it'd be interesting to see how this election maps out because, like I say, it's experience. It's experiencing Jose Alvarado as a county legislator versus Rondon Reyes trying to get an elected office and trying to give a voice to the people that he supports.
Mm-hmm. The only problem.
So it'll be interesting to see how that.
It will be interesting. Unfortunately, there are only these two people that we're aware that are running for office.
That's true. Unless there's some surprises when the petitions get filed. Unless there's some surprise, you never know.
That's true. You never know. That's true, too. One thing I find is that Jose Alvarado's 10-year stint as a county board legislator didn't amount to very much in my eyes. From what I remember.
I agree with you there. No, absolutely.
And then there are also conflicts of interest with regard to London Reyes that's difficult for me to overcome, such as when he ran against Virginia Perez, whether people liked her or didn't like her, there was an incident in which he manhandled her. Very difficult for me to overcome that or overlook it. And she filed a police report to that effect, and that was never denied as well. So that becomes an issue. And then the other thing, though, too, with London Reyes and is that when he ran 2 years ago against Virginia Perez, I remember that he told me personally that he was just looking. He was ticked off at the mayor because the mayor hadn't given him a job. That's very nice. So I said, well, did you ask the mayor for a job? Well, I don't know. I don't remember his answer to that because all I heard, and I probably shut down right then and there when he told me that he wanted a job. They're running for political office to get a job. And now,
that actually seems the way it's done these days. You know, these people run for office not so much to win the race, but to try and get the employment for themselves, more or less.
Excellent definition of the standards that we are abiding by now. So, in other words, it's like this passive aggressive push for a position by challenging. The power that be, so to speak. Well, that's the other thing in this particular race. Forget about what happened 2 years ago. In this particular race, I understand that London Reyes is so concerned about getting his son a job in Yonkers that he would give up this challenge of Jose Alvarado if the mayor would give a job to his son and he'd pull out.
Oh.
Isn't that great?
Oh, boy.
I think his son works in Brooklyn, and he'd rather that he not commute that far, and I understand that. I wouldn't want to commute that far to Brooklyn either. I'm sure if you take a bus and a train, it may take them literally an hour and a half to get there. So that's a lot of time. That's like 3 hours every day, you know, coming and going. And so that, you know, that robs people the capacity to live a better life, of course. We always would rather just roll out of bed and there we are. In our office.
Yeah, no, something. Like I say, when I was running for public office, it was never about for me to get a job for myself. It was about the how I can help the people. But it seems like ever since in the last 10 years that has changed. It's more like, well, I'm going to run for public office, but if I don't win, I want to at least have a certainty that something's going to that I'm going to get something out of it. I'm saying to myself, isn't it supposed to be you're supposed to help the people? And it seems like those days are over, sadly.
Well, hopefully they're not. You know, I think a lot will be told as we move ahead. I think people are tired of being bamboozled, or they don't want to feel jaded. They want to be able to vote for somebody that will be responsive to their needs. That's why they're going to office, or that's what we think they're doing when they're going up. And that's why it was important for me to point these things out.
Absolutely,
and I do remember one last thing about Jose Alvarado. It took him close to 10 years before he earned anything from Westchester County legislators. I remember the last thing that did not impress me was that he was able to get a grant from the Westchester County Board of Legislators that amounted to $10,000. For the city of Yonkers, and it was directed to the YWCA. That $10,000 was directed to the YWCA so that people who like to play dominoes would be able to attend that facility for one evening a week. And I'm saying, is that the best they can do? I mean,
it's true. They could do a lot better than that. That's for sure. Yeah.
I mean, so that's like $1,000 a year, and that was it.
Oh boy.
But then you know what I don't understand is, and I remember this in a fond way, even though I don't have the best concepts of remember John Spencer, the mayor, going back about 20 years. You know, he always used to say, and I learned that he was right then, and I think he continues to be right, the County Board of Legislators don't do squat for the city of Yonkers.
Why are we even
involved? What do we get from it?
We don't really get anything, to be honest, because the problem with being a county legislator is you're one of 17, and it seems like we never really know what goes on at the county board of legislators, more or less. It seems like, and that's a failing of the board, because the board should inform the public as to what they're doing, what the actions they're doing, and everything, and it seems to be closed and everything, more or less.
Well,
it's kind of sad, because
example,
how are we getting representing Yonkers from people on the county board? You know, it's really, really begs the question.
It really does, because all I know is the city of Yonkers, based on our population, the official population, which only went up to 201,000 last they counted, but then so many people who are doing the census are so scared to walk into every community in Yonkers. I don't know why. If they need a military escort to walk into every building, then that's what they need to do. Or maybe they need to have a police escort them wherever they go so they can find out what the census is. So it went up from like just shy of 200,000 to 201,000 people, which doesn't make any sense, because look at all the people that are going to school in Yonkers.
That's also true, yes.
We're up to 27,000 children in school. You mean we only a few parents had all those extra kids? I mean, it doesn't make sense. You know,
it really doesn't, to be honest. I agree.
And I still believe that we've undercounted the population.
I think we have on a lot of levels, too. I agree, Hezzy, because I think a lot of levels with the census and everything, every time there's a census, these kinds of issues happen where Yonkers is always underreported, and that helps us in terms of federal funding and other kinds of funding. And it's very important to not be underreported, because then we can get our fair money that we are definitely owed and everything. And If it's underreported, it's not going to help us in the least.
Exactly. I would hope, and I probably to see a policeman coming into the building is one thing, but if it's on a particular floor, then the policeman can stay close to the elevator or close to the stairwell so that they don't intrude or frighten people that are being engaged in the census, but they're there to protect the people who are the census takers. If that's what it requires, I think we need to go there. Because we need to resolve once and for all the population density of the city. Based on the population of 201,000, Yonkers represents 21% of the entire population of Westchester County. And I don't believe, if you must know the truth, I don't believe we get 21% of the valuations of the disbursement of funding and attributes from the county. And I'm getting tired of it, you really must know.
I don't blame you.
I
don't
know
agree.
Why we get short shrift everywhere we go. I mean, what have
that's
we done?
True. That's true, Hezzy. With the state, we get short shrifted. With the county, we get short shrifted. I'm saying to myself, we send our tax dollars up to the county, up to the state. How come we're not getting the best bang for our buck and getting the money that we are deserving back?
Correct. So I don't understand who dropped the ball here. You know, I mean, I'm
and also the thing is also, you know,
there's
not a lot of people standing up, and I'm saying people are staying quiet. I'm saying myself, people should be standing up and yelling out that, you know, how come we're not getting the money that we're owed from the county and the state? It seems like it's always the only time you ever hear those things when it comes to the state is during the budget process, but it's just only when the budget process gets started and everything.
Yeah.
To me, it should be the whole year because the budget is the full year.
It's very true. I think we need to really delve into it throughout the year so that we can know exactly what each department is saying and doing, and they can show us the figures, and that could be part of the study. And it needs to be done.
True.
It's not being done.
Absolutely.
And you know, quite often – I was listening to last year's budget, and I've been listening to it for years, but every time I hear it, it seems to also get to the point where I'm starting to feel that the department heads, they're controlling the conversation, and there's nothing wrong about their controlling the conversation. What I'm really disgusted about is that the people who sit on the Yonkers City Council seem to be incapable of asking questions and demanding answers.
Yeah, I agree.
As well as
I agree. There doesn't seem to be any kind of questions being asked. Almost like it's, this is going to get agreed to, and that's going to get agreed to. But I'm saying in years past, you used to have city council members who would actually ask questions that were legitimate questions. All these other people they on the council now, they don't really ask the tough questions. They just let things ride and everything. I'm saying to myself, This is your chance to ask questions of all these when all the department heads come before the budget committee. This is your time to ask the questions about where does this go, where does that go, you know, different employment and, you know, different issues on how we can save taxpayer dollars for the Yonkers taxpayer. And it seems like they all fall down on the job on the council.
Well, I cannot disagree with you at all on that basis. The only thing I disagree with you about is that there are people like you that are involved. So you don't fall into
Yeah, no, it's true because we don't have that many people involved. It gets sad after a while. Cause I'm saying we all should stand together. We all should stand up because the way we get the government that we want is we all need to stand together. But unfortunately, that's not the case these days. A lot of people are afraid of retribution. They don't want to speak out because if they have a job with the city of Yonkers, they don't want to speak out because then they're afraid of retribution. And you know, even on our blog, Hezzy, we still always get a lot of information from anonymous people who send us stuff, and I've seen those go down throughout the years because I think people are afraid of retribution these days.
People are afraid of retribution. That's why on the Yonkers Tribune website, everything is now anonymous. Nobody's name is there. I don't even know who's commenting because I don't want to know. I don't have bad thoughts about anybody or good thoughts about anybody. I happen to like everybody. And, they may not think I like them, but you know, I'm very respectful. So, you know. But I'm also going to be honest, and that's the whole point too. Maybe that's what ticks some people off. They don't like honesty. Oh, so I got to ask you about one thing. I don't know if you read our story. We wrote a story about the fact that the governor wanted to give the city of Yonkers $70 million to balance out our Board of Education that's been in a deficit of about $60 million that was expected to be the deficit on the Board of Ed side. And if you remember, last year we literally robbed the last penny out of our fund balance at the Board of Ed. So they had no money there, too. So in a sense, the governor was saying, we'll give you $60 million to straighten out your bullshit, and at the same time, I'm going to give you $10 million more in order for you to be able to replenish some of your fund balance, which stood at one time at $24 million. And they squandered it because of their lack of good conduct, and also the fact that the Board of Ed keeps raising the cost. Every time you turn around, it costs more money. They keep employing more people at high-end rates, and you know, and it doesn't work. They could cut back on books that cost us a fortune. They could change it for technology. They don't do any of this stuff. Every time you turn around, it costs more and more and more.
Anyway, absolutely.
The bottom line is that it turns out Andrea Stewart Cousins put a kibosh on that. She didn't want to do it. And I was wondering, like, what's her problem? And then I remember when she was running against Nick Spano, the senator, the former senator, and there was one race in which she lost supposedly or allegedly by 18 votes. And when she lost that, she was running as a Democrat. Nick Spano was the Republican. The Democratic Party and she decided to relinquish the challenge. And in a sense, Nick Spano was able to return to office, even though it was learned months and months later that he never really officially won, even though he got the nod. And then I'm saying, well, I guess Andrea Stewart Cousins is now the Democratic conference leader, and she's the majority leader of the Senate.
Yeah.
She's ticked off that she lost that time against Nick Spano. And I'm saying she should be ticked off at Ken Jenkins, who was the Democratic chair at the time. And
that's
why did
she
get out on the kids? I mean, what right
that's
has she
also
got to
true,
do that?
Yes.
Why
are you
blowing the kids out the door? We had the funding, and mm-hmm. she refused to let it happen. And, you know, her excuse is, I'm a woman, and I'm black, and I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, no.
He's not like
it
that.
Really
he's
is unbelievable, yeah. Because, you know, all these politicians, they all say that it's all about the children, but it's never all about the children. It's all about themselves, it seems like to me.
Well, I concur. It is all about Andrea Stewart Cousins, and she wanted to prove
whenever it fits their uses, they all say it's about the children, it's about the children, it's about the children, but it's never about the children. If you really look at everything, it's always about the politician on how they think they can help themselves. And to me, the children should come first. And to me, in a lot of levels, the children don't come first.
You know what the last permutation story? We wrote that about 2 weeks ago, and last
mm-hmm.
week it turns out the governor said, "Well, I'd rather give. If you don't want that, then I'll give him $40 million." And she said, "No, you can give him only $20 million." And then she told the city, "I want you to cut back on your expenditures at the Board of Education by $20 million." And I want the city of Yonkers to give the Board of Education $20 million. So there's your 20-20-20 perspective. And we don't have $20 million from the city side to bolster up the Board of Ed. And besides,
that's true.
It's one pocket, one wallet. Whatever mm-hmm. we get that they regard as the city side is not divorced from the Board of Ed side. The Board of Ed is part of the city of Yonkers, so whatever funding mm-hmm. we get is going to go to two different sides of the aisle,
yes.
but it's the same, comes out of the same wallet. So I don't know what she's playing at, but I'm disgusted by it.
Yeah, no, it's unreal. I don't blame you, Hedge.
I
really
don't.
Why
do we go up to Albany begging for what? I mean, do we need to beg for 27?
That's all true. That really is true, to be honest, because they all go fight. They all go, you know, it's almost like sometimes with these politicians or community leaders or something, essentially, they all say it's about the children, but it's more about photo ops than anything else, more or less. Because Shelley Mayer and Andres Ducutton, all in these pictures, I'm saying to myself, what are you doing other than being there for a photo op? What are you doing to effectuate change to make sure we totally
Where's
get our fair share?
It's about the money. Where's the money? Why
it is.
People in elected office? Isn't that their job? It's not there to look good. It's not there to
I agree with you. Absolutely.
Or to curse. Who cares what they do? Just bring in the money. That's what it's all about.
That's true. That's what their job is, to help us, to help bring money to the people that you represent. And it seems like in a lot of these,
when they
go up to Albany, it's sort of like a photo op, and, you know, it's sort of like a media event. But the thing is, you're supposed to be standing up there for us when we're not there, fighting for us to make sure we get enough money. And these elected officials aren't doing their job in Albany, it looks like.
No, they're not. So, where's the money going to go to? The point is that we haven't gotten a fair share in Yonkers for as long as I know, for at least 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Maybe longer.
Yeah.
So I remember the days of John Spencer and from Phil Amaconi, and now we have Mike Spano. The bottom line is we're not getting our fair share, and everybody's cried about it. I don't want to see the
kids
go up there.
That's also true. We never really hear anything until the budget process starts. I'm saying to myself, this should be a 365-day-a-year job of going up there fighting for more money. It shouldn't start when the state budget is going to be approved, or, you know, when the budget gets proposed and it gets approved. It should be for the whole year, you know, in terms of going up there and going up there and fighting for more money every day and trying to advocate every day. It should not just be during the budget process. It really is outrageous,
exactly,
I think,
right,
a lot of levels.
On so many levels, it's unbelievable. One thing I do agree with Andrea Stewart Cousins, the Board of Education has best start reducing their costs where they can.
That's
and
true.
Prove why they can't if they can't. I'm sick and tired of just BS.
I agree.
That's all you hear. I can't do this, I can't do that. Well, what can you do? And if you can't do, then why are you still employed in the job? If you can't
That's true. And also another thing, Hezzy, is where's all that money going and everything? I'm saying to myself, Yonkers, Board of Education, always has first always has deficits. Where's all the money that the state and other and the city gives them? Where's all that money go? Because, like I say, budget year I see this, the Board of Education always running in deficit. I'm saying to myself, well, where's all the money? Where's the accountability in terms of where all this money gets spent? And
we don't get
always asking for. There's not.
We never get an accounting.
Yeah, no, it's true. And the bottom line is they always have their hand out asking for money. Where's the money that you get each year? Where's that called? Honestly,
I don't know.
It's totally unreal.
I think it probably goes to spending more than we should, because we're not reducing costs where we can. So there are ways to do it. They just have to deal with it, but they're not, because unfortunately, Quezada, who is the Board of Education superintendent, Dr. Quezada, I hope I said that first, and then you got Reverend Steve Lopez, who's the president of the Yonkers Board of Education. I don't see any discussion that shows what's going on or why it is the way it's going on. They just
me neither. Me neither. I've seen no kind of discussion like that. And, you know, another thing too. There needs to be open. You know, people say open transparency comes to the city, but also needs to be open and transparency when it comes to the Yonkers Board of Education as well.
It should be, but we don't get very much action.
We don't get
it
at all. No, absolutely not. Definitely not. Look at everything happened with that school when you report,
Everything
you report about that school and everything, and everything was always, everything all seems to be hidden.
It's all hidden. They hid it so well that people have even forgotten about the Bidea school. They forgot about the parking lot under the weight of a truck because they refused to even.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember we were talking about that. Yeah.
Oh God, it's just.
It's so outrageous what goes on and everything. But like I said, there's no real accountability. I think, like I said, people are always calling for accountability of the city, but also needs to be accountability when it comes to the Yonkers Board of Education as well. We need to have an open, transparent process here, and there doesn't seem to be one coming out of the Board of Education, and it's sad because this is supposed to be for the children.
I don't know about you, Delphin, but all I know is that I haven't gotten any communication from the Board of Education.
Me neither, to be honest.
For a month. Geraldine Fierce.
Mine's probably
here.
A couple of years, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
They don't send much out, and I'm saying to myself, isn't there some positive stuff that you can inform the public of that's going on in the Yonkers public schools? It seems like even the positive stuff gets hidden. I'm saying to myself, there's no reason for the positive stuff. If you have something positive to inform the public of, then you should do it because that'll make people feel good.
But that's brilliant.
Like something is happening.
Well, that what's brilliant of your recognition is that they don't celebrate what's positive. And
that's true.
They also negate the negative. And so, what value is it to have a communication officer that's getting paid so much money, and double dipping on top of that, and because she can, because she's really retired, she doesn't even live in Yonkers anymore. She's down in Florida. And what does she know other than whatever she's told? And she didn't know anything. She was also told before what to write and how to do. And she did that under every different superintendent of schools that she ever worked for. She's a deputy being, you know, I don't want to use the term, but you know what the term would be. So the bottom line is she's not done her job. And I don't know why we still employ people like that.
I agree.
I agree
because, like I said, the thing is, you got to try and, when you're like the Board of Education and there's positive stuff going on, you try and inform the public as to what's going on. It seems like they hide stuff when something's bad, but they also hide stuff when something's good. And you got to highlight the good stuff. You know, so people feel, well, this is happening good in the school system and this is happening good in the school system. But we never get a chance to celebrate these successes.
Well, that's the problem. We're always dealing with failings, and we don't have anything to celebrate. And that is the whole demeanor of the city that's permitted this to take place, and it hasn't been just under one administration. It's been going on
in
three different administrations that I know of, because I was only on the scene the last 20 years. So I'm just really quite appalled, and it should change, and I don't know if it will.
I don't know
so
either. Like I said, I always hope for a better day, but it never changes because, like you say, whether it was a Democratic administration or a Republican administration, still these kinds of things are happening, and you change maze, but it's still the same old, same old.
That's true. Oh, I can't believe it. You know, we always go on and on, but I realize it's already after, and I've got to attend an 11:15 meeting. So forgive me, and then we'll speak again next week.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
And
have yourself a great day. Thank you.
You too. Before you go, just can you give us the address for the Yonkers Insider, the website address? Oh, he's already gone. So anybody can go through any search engine and simply look up Yonkers Insider. That's the name of the publication that Delphi Musler is the publisher and editor of, and you'll get a chance to look at the work that he puts up there. Very, very compelling in many cases, and that's good. Anyway, so we want to thank you all for being with us today, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to have Dr. Oren M. Levin-Waldman. We're going to talk to him about the latest issue. He sent it to me yesterday, but I was out till like 11 o'clock last night and didn't have time to catch up. So I'll try to do the best I can today after this very important meeting today and try to upload all the information. Probably the first thing will have to be Oren Levin-Waldman's piece, because that's what we're going to discuss tomorrow morning from 10 to 11. So all the best, and thank you again for being with us. It's been a pleasure. Be well. Bye.